Welcome to the Fuller Chasing Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 17th of July, and I'm recording at 9:50 p.m., and that is British summertime here in London. Okay, now, this being Friday, this is the big picture long-term outlook for the various asset classes. But first, let's have a quick look at this week. Because like last week, it's been pretty volatile, although with the bulls actually regaining the upper hand here. And why might that be? Well, the factors that had been worrying, or the single factor that had been worrying markets the most, was the uncertainty over the possibility of a Greek exit. It was just a good excuse in regions far away from the UK to say, well, far away from the European Union, rather, an excuse to say, well, let's hold off buying here, and that's enough to cause corrections as we had been seeing. But those corrections have ended, and recoveries have been underway here overall. Now, we can be pretty certain that we're not going to get any sudden shocks here with Greece. My own feeling is that the country's in for a long struggle, but for now, in both the short and possibly lengthy medium term, Greece is firmly back in the Iron Maiden of EU control. Now, the other factor that had been worrying markets quite a bit was China, and it's an unnerving market for sure. But I think we need to distill it down to what have we actually got here in terms of, one, valuations, and two, monetary policy and overall GDP growth. Well, there are plenty of uncertainties overall regarding overall GDP growth. conflicting signals overall, but I think that it's still, while it may still be slowing, that it may also still be better than a lot of other economies. We will see over the longer term if that's actually true. What I think is very important in terms of valuations, obviously the A-share valuations became quite ridiculous, and the moves, this is not unusual in China overall, and they didn't raise margin requirements, or they didn't do it soon enough. So you had seriously overpriced valuations on the Shanghai Composite Index and also on the Shenzhen index particularly. But just to put that, and we've seen very significant retracements there, but just to put that into perspective, the Shanghai Composite, as of today's close, is still up 22.2% in US dollar terms for the year. And the Shenzhen Composite Index, that's the much smaller index, the more speculative index, is up 54.6% in US dollar terms on the year. Now, I'd give those two a wide berth unless you really know the market and are able to move around in that market and can cherry pick the value issues. To me, what's interesting in that region, it's mainly you'll find them listed, shares listed on the Hong Kong and indices, the Hang Seng Index HSI, and then the H share index. And you know, when you get valuations below 9%, which was the case earlier in the week, And those are pretty attractive levels here overall. And the third, whatever that was case for the H share index and the Hang Seng index, right on 10 times earnings. So I find that I find those valuations reassuring in an economy that is growing faster than most other economies, even though it is still slowing. What gives me more confidence in that over in China overall is the fact that the money supply is certainly supportive for equities. China is really engaging in its own form of quantitative easing, and that's good news. Now, we're also getting very accommodative monetary policy still in Japan, and this is going to probably continue for a very, very long time. So I maintain that Japan is in a secular bull market, and this could run on, in other words, for a good many more years here overall. And we've seen it race back up to its highs, and that TSE2 index, which is a lead indicator, is actually pushed through to a new high for this recovery. The indices are a little overbought in the short term. A lot of stock market indices around the globe actually are a little overbought in the short term. So we may see a consolidation, as I mentioned yesterday, and I think that's well, more than likely to be the case. But Japan is certainly one of my favorite markets in the Asia Pacific region, and it is in form here right now. India is definitely one of my favorite markets in the Asia Pacific region, and it is continuing to edge higher, having seen the low in its lengthy medium-term consolidation process last month. And China, well, it'll probably remain volatile. Exciting if you don't mind that sort of thing, terrifying if you do. And assess it that way, but I'm happy to have some long-term investments in China, but I need to remind myself that when they next become quite overextended relative to MAs, that I should do some judicious profit taking. Okay, looking at the European stock markets, I think that here, well, you know all about the European problems, so I'm not going to dwell on that. We've been over that territory on plenty of occasions. But I've already mentioned that the Greek problem is off the front pages now, and therefore investors are going to look at Europe in a different light. And the main factor, which has been helping the market recently, and again, it's a little overbought here in the short term, so we did see a consolidation starting here today, and I would expect that to continue for a while. But I certainly don't think we're going to retest those lows and those reaction lows that we saw recently. And the focus will be on Mario Draghi's 60 million euros per month, which carry on well into 2006 and longer if necessary. So he's going to do what he needs to do here to support this. And so that's a very powerful tailwind. It got ignored for a while during all the Grexit fears, but it's not going to be ignored any anymore. And there are other factors, though, that we need to consider here over the next few months. One, we're still in a seasonal period, the May through October period, where stock markets historically underperform on average. So that will cap the most of the rallies somewhat. But what we can also well, then there's another factor here, and that's the political ramifications of the whole Grexit issue. Because I think that European romantics sort of see the EU as, well, it's a nice, happy, big family operation here, never any more wars again, and so on. Well, you can see some of the language that has been thrown around over the last few months within Europe. You can see the heated debates that have occurred, and perceptions have changed here. Whereas in the beginning of the Greek problems, it was mainly a matter of, well, they were stupid to let Greece in to begin with, let it into the EU to begin with. But then, really, we were mostly focusing on the incompetence of the Greek administrators and a not very political, extreme left-wing administration. But now it's moved on, and people are looking at the straitjacket that Greece finds itself in right now, and concluding that Greece has been made an example of, so that other southern European countries aren't tempted to go down this route and ask for debt forgiveness and so on. And so, really, the masters that be within the European Union are suddenly looking, instead of far-sighted, helpful leaders, are looking really a bit like the Blue Meanies from the Beatles. Does anybody remember that? You can find it on the web if not. Now, therefore, I think the two trump cards that Europe has: cheap equities generally, and of course the Mario Draghi quantitative easing. And that can certainly lift stock markets higher. By the end of the year, I would expect to see some decent gains here in these European indices from current levels. Okay, moving on to Wall Street. Interestingly, Wall Street has pretty much avoided the 10% correction that's been overdue, and that hasn't occurred for such a long period. Although, if you take a look at what's happened with the utilities index and what's happened with the transport index, they either got much closer to that or even beyond. I haven't checked that percentage change because those aren't the most important indices. The most important indice to keep an eye on there in the U.S. market is the NASDAQ composite, and that blasted up into new highs, new all-time highs here today, greatly helped by the huge move to the upside in Google shares, largely because of this new, is it financial controller, who's been appointed to and is apparently going to crack down on some of the vanity projects that Google was spending a lot of money on. And investors really liked that. And I think we also had a lot of short covering in Google today. But don't want to dwell on that too much. But what I will say is that one technology is still a sector very much in form. The biotechnology has been red hot for a long time, and we had new highs this week in that index. Again, a little bit overextended, so we can see some consolidations. The Dow and the Russell 2000, the S&P 500, they got good bounces from their rising moving averages. So that's impressive. That's encouraging. But again, we still remain in this somewhat choppy period here, and I would expect over the near term that we'll see some consolidations of these gains that have occurred quite recently here. Excellent gains that have occurred in the U.S. markets. But keep an eye on those technologies, and they're performing. Technology shares, they're performing superbly for the most part. Looking elsewhere, mining sectors, well, still under heavy pressure. Precious metals have been melting down. The latest blow to sentiment, which Owen has commented on, is the reports that have come out indicating that China hasn't bought anywhere near as much gold as people were saying they'd bought. But this is still a bear market, and beginning to get a little bit oversold in the short term. We had another big drops here today. Virtually all these precious metals hitting new reaction lows in here, and they're not helped by the strength of the U.S. dollar overall, but also in an environment where we have disinflationary and some deflationary pressures, and it's an environment where a lot of investors are more interested in yield, getting a decent yield, than in having a hedge. Such as precious metals. So they're still very much out of favor. And this bearish environment, I think, will only be pronounced with some occasionally sharp technical rallies within the overall downtrends, but they haven't bottomed yet. And I would watch it with the sector with interest, but I wouldn't want to have any positions in these precious metals. But the lower they go, the more interesting they become as potential long-term recovery candidates. But if you come in too early and you get an overreaction to the downside, well, that can be extremely painful, as we probably all know. So I don't. I think interesting to watch them, but I don't want to be there. I'd much rather be in a high-performing shares, technology, various different equities, all various different autonomies that are very, very much in form, or some of the extremely attractive valuation plays in equities. And big national themes, which I've already talked about, India, Japan, and China, if it appeals to you, but that one will remain more volatile. Okay, I've already said that earlier in this audio. Now, looking at the government bonds, and they're they've been quiet in here this week. 2.345% on the U.S. 10-year, so it's been hovering right around and just above and just below that 2.35 level for the last 3 days. VIX, incidentally, is down to that volatility index indicator. That's down to 11.95. That's the lower side of the range. It really doesn't get much below there, or you see it and then it's gone. So it's the bottom side of the range here for the VIX index. which means investors are pretty relaxed. Therefore, we can sit there for a while, but the next move will be to the upside over time. But as far as bonds are concerned, let's have a little quick drink of water. As far as bonds are concerned, this is, you've heard me say this in virtually every audio, but it's a sector that I don't want to be in. Bond investors have had a great 35-year run. The only justification for holding bonds in this environment is that you may feel that GDP growth is just never going to recover. And that's not my view. I think that we're at a stage in the global cycle where GDP growth, we should see signs, evidence of GDP growth picking up. I wouldn't be at all surprised if the US wasn't one of the leaders in that improving growth picture among the really big economies. Growth certainly improving in India, for instance. I think growth will pick up a little bit now in the European Union. And China isn't probably quite so bad as some people actually think it is. So I wouldn't be at all surprised to say to see that GDP growth picking up over the lengthy medium term. And against that background, I just really don't want to have the bonds. Those yields are not that attractive. I don't think they're safe. That's everybody buys bonds because they feel they're safe. And if the secular bull market in terms of falling government bond yields is over, then the secular bear market in terms of sideways to higher yields is underway. And the best that can occur is a long-ranging basing phase. But the next big move in these bond yields, in my opinion, will be on the upside. So I just don't want to be there. Let's look at some of the other factors here. I talked about U.S. economy showing more signs of recovery towards the end of the towards the latter part of this year and in the years ahead. The biggest possible impediment, a known factor here, is the strength of the dollar. And that, I'm sure, is a concern to the Fed overall. Today, that dollar index, for instance, is 97.95. And so we're, and it's in form at the moment, so we may well, I would expect to see it moving above 98 next week. And of course, the top area is just over 100, so we may be going up to at least have another look at that. And the higher that goes, the more it is a headwind for a lot of U.S. multinational companies, because they will be consolidating earnings in U.S. dollars. And also, it could be a problem for when the dollar was still very much on its back. And if you go back more than 6 months, for a long period, it was just near the end of its long cyclical bear market, and a lot of people were, or a lot of countries were tempted to borrow in dollars because they didn't really fear a recovery in the dollar. So a stronger dollar here could eventually lead to some problems in some of the emerging markets. Not in China, not in not in India, I'm pretty sure. Some of what they used to call little tigers, but they never don't call them that anymore. Could be on the list, but it's hard to say which which countries might be affected. But a strong dollar is not going in the short to medium term is not going to be good news. It's going to be a potential source of problems, not least for the U.S. economy. Overall, on a longer term basis, this service maintains that the dollar has completed its secular bear market and is in a secular bull market, which the factors behind it are going to be U.S. Virtual energy independence, and that's not going to be a temporary situation. And it also the most important factor is the USA's biggest or big technology lead. It's leader in most technologies, and actually its strong energy position is thanks to those technologies. So that's the really big story, that technology lead that really is going to help the U.S. economy and the U.S. dollar to perform over the very, very long term. So I think for if we say looking at each year going ahead, is the dollar more likely to end the year higher than it entered the year? My answer would be yeah, 8 out of 10 times per decade. That's what I would expect to see. But and that's fine. The economy can certainly live with that, provided it's not moving too quickly from time to time. And I've described this period as lengthy consolidation, and I very much hope it is a very lengthy consolidation. If we get a sustained break in the dollar index above the 100 level, that will be signifying that we only have had a medium-term correction phase in that dollar index. Now, what's been pushing it up in here? Well, the euro is coming down, and I think Mario Draghi would be very happy to see that euro a little bit lower. It's currently against the dollar. The euro is at 1.0830. I certainly don't expect any euro collapse. But there's no reason why the dollar, why the euro rather, should be a strong currency in here. You've got that slower growth within the European Union, and you have an inv you have the quantitative easing. Lost my train of thought there for a second. You have the quantitative easing, which virtually ensures that the dollar, the euro will be lower. So quantitative easing will keep the euro from appreciating all that much, but it's certainly not going to collapse. And similarly, with the Japanese yen, quantitative easing is keeping the yen relatively soft here overall. Now we've had the Bank of England governor in the UK talking about how we're going to get higher interest rates over the well before too long. I think is the basic message overall, and that's pushed sterling up higher, not really against the firm dollar, but it's pushed sterling up against the euro. And we don't want too much of that in here because Europe is the biggest market for UK exports. Okay, what else is important here. What's going to happen with crude oil? I feel that based on the price for let's take Brent crude. And I think the boundaries that we've seen, it didn't quite get to $40 on the downside, I don't think, but I think $40 roughly the main lower boundary, and $70, which it did reach the main upper boundary. I think we'll see Brent crude spending most of its time, and it's today, it's currently at 57. I think we'll see it ranging between that 40 and 70 region. You'll get occasional pushes above and below that that band overall. But a point I'm trying to make is think in terms of what we know now. Crude oil is very likely to stay in this range for a very lengthy period overall. That's not so good for oil producers, obviously, but it's extremely good news for the oil importers and the global economy generally. You and I think that's another factor that will help global GDP growth along the over the very long term, and this being the big picture long-term outlook, I will come back to that point. But the main factors that I've already commented on here are the advantages of technology in terms of GDP growth. And also the beneficial environment of much lower energy prices in the 10 years and or more going forward than in the period just over a little over 6 months ago. That no, a little bit longer than that. But sorry, I'll take the years up to 2015. Crude oil prices were a lot higher. We're not going back to that environment at all. And the easiest forecast for me to make is say maintain that high that we saw in 2008, which is a big factor in the market crash. Crude oil up at $147, and I don't think we'll get anywhere close to that. Not in real terms, in other words, inflation-adjusted terms. Inflation not a problem here right now, but it will be at some stage over the next 20 to 30 years. But the big change in energy is, again, technology has made it possible to produce oil much more efficiently, more ways to produce oil, more ways to find oil, fracking, that's huge, and virtually all countries can use that technology, and they may not need to or they may not want to, but it's there, it's available. So there's, we're not running out of crude oil or the ability to produce it. And then, of course, we get the highly desirable, provided the prices are not too expensive, development of the alternatives. One is natural gas, which is sort of an interim. Important and because it's less of a pollutant than the crude oil, but the big one really is of course in the renewables led by or it certainly will be led by over the long term solar energy. Again, that is all achievable because of technology. So these are the themes for a secular bull market. And that is what I have been long forecasting here, because the very choppy environment, starting really from 2000, that was the end of the last secular bull market. And so, we have a good 13, 14 years or more of just a very choppy environment. There's some evidence that we're already in evidence that that secular bull market has actually begun, but I still think we'll see few choppy years here as we get back to a normalization of monetary policies, but over the long term, I think equities are going to be the best place to be, and that we will see this this secular bull market. Now, what about other commodities? I think again, technology is a contributor to the underperformance in the industrial commodities. Oil is a good example that I just mentioned because of the competition that's coming up, and also the ability to produce more of the oil thanks to the technologies. Same thing applies to metals. Competition increasing from man-made products, and also the ability to produce more metals more efficiently thanks to technology. I've often mentioned to you that towards the end of bull markets in equities, we get and they usually occur. The classic scenario, doesn't always have to end this way, but it almost always has ended this way with bull markets. When you get global bull markets, is that you get bull markets because global GDP growth is becoming much stronger. Corporations are benefiting from that, but then the inflationary pressures start to pick up, and that drives up the industrial material prices. So you get metals, for instance, pushing sharply higher, and then countries are lifting interest rates to curb the inflationary pressures and to prevent GDP growth from overheating, and equities go into a bear market phase. Well, obviously, we're nowhere near that stage here right now. So you can have choppy markets, but are you really going to get significant bear markets? No, you can get statistical 20%, a little over 20% type bear markets, but the answer is no, we're not living in an incredibly dangerous environment. We're actually living in a somewhat choppy but very attractive environment here for equities overall. What about agricultural commodities? Supply is the key variable there. And I was a bit worried about it, but for this year, but these staple grains, wheat, corn, soybeans, having moved up very sharply, albeit from very low levels, they've rolled over in the last 3 weeks, 3 weeks or so, and are giving up a chunk of those gains. That suggests that crop depletion is, or crop threats are not quite so great as people were feeling a little earlier in the cycle. And last note, I think here, just to talk about that secular bull market potential, technology, the biggest factor, crucially important, biggest factor by far. Cheaper energy costs created by technology, that's the second bull plank there. Global GDP growth picking up, but within the context of global GDP growth picking up, the rise of the global middle classes, this huge consumer market, it's greater today than we've ever seen before. In the history of the world, the population is larger, population is still increasing, but the population that counts here in terms of the secular bull market for stock markets, the middle classes, and we're getting this rapid expansion of middle classes within countries around the world, and the biggest growth, of course, occurring in the Asia Pacific region, but it's taking place pretty well everywhere, or it certainly will over the next 10 to 20 years. And on that note, I would say wish you an excellent weekend. All the very best. Thanks for listening.